They finally get it to Mitchell. 10 on the shot clock. Had it back tapped. He lost it. The Nuggets come up with a defensive play. Murray. They missed the layup. Gobert got it. Mitchell hanging at the other end. 2 seconds to go for the win. And it rims out.
Oh, what a heartbreaking loss for the Utah Jazz last night. Game 7, NBA Western Conference playoffs, round number 1. We thought there'd be all kinds of fireworks. There really wasn't, because I think both teams are just tired of scoring too often during the series. As the Nuggets beat the Jazz 80-78 last night. Nikola Jokic making a tie-breaking basket, 27 seconds left in the game. And then that set up the wild ending where Gary Harris, who had missed some time in the series, but he's back, a good defender for the Nuggets, really made a nice defensive play to mess up Donovan Mitchell late in the ballgame on the final possession, or the second to last possession. And Mitchell turned the ball over, and then the Nuggets had a break opportunity. And as Mark Jackson so accurately pointed out, and that's what the good analysts do, is they point out something that you maybe missed. You're caught up in watching as a fan, going, the Nuggets have a 4-on-2 or a 3-on-1, get a layup, game over, you're up 4 points. Yeah, and also, it's under 10 seconds here, pull it out, run clock, and then get fouled and ice hit the line. Instead, the Nuggets tried, Jamal Murray pushed it and then passed it, and the layup was missed, and then the Nuggets didn't have defensive balance, and the Jazz hurried and got the rebound and an outlet, and Mike Conley, as you just heard, that shot, it was a three-pointer, would have won the series for the Jazz. The Nuggets would have been out after blowing a 19-point lead and then deciding to try to get a layup with about 7 or 8 seconds left when they're bringing down the floor, pushing it. And Conley's shot was in and out from the far wing for 3 to win the game and the series. Nuggets dodged a gigantic bullet last night. They had a 19-point lead. They blew that, and then they nearly blew it at the end. But the Nuggets became the 12th team in NBA history to overcome a 3-1 deficit to win the series. Or you could say the Jazz blew a 3-1 lead in this series. And I remember Donovan Mitchell being interviewed after he had one of his 50-point games. And they said, what about performance tonight? He said, it doesn't mean it's nothing. We got to win one more. He knew. I don't know if the rest of his team knew, but he knew they had to win more and more. And they maybe relaxed, or the Nuggets made adjustments. But the Nuggets, they were dead in the water. They were down 15 in the third quarter in Game 5. They were dead in the water. And all of a sudden, they rallied and won that game, and it changed everything. And Jamal Murray last night, a modest 17 points. Jokic, I mentioned that he had not been playing great. He had 30 points, 14 rebounds in Game 7. Rudy Gobert, 19 points, 18 rebounds. Donovan Mitchell with 22 points. And Murray and Mitchell both had 50-point games, two 50-point games in the series. And Mitchell and Murray, Jamal Murray of the Nuggets and Donovan Mitchell of the Jazz, combined to score the most points by two players in the same NBA series in NBA playoff history. 475 points.
It is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Last night, a modest 39 combined.
Yeah.
They'd been doing that in the fourth quarter, the two combined. So the Nuggets get the win, 80-78. They move on. Once again, the 12th team to overcome a 3-1 deficit. I think it's now teams in 3-1 deficits, NBA playoffs, and NBA history are now 12 and 294, something like that. So the odds were against the Nuggets, but
definitely
they got it done. You know what's interesting is the bubble effect, because you didn't have that ambiance of the crowd, no home court advantage, and also it was really interesting when the game was over that Jamal Murray immediately went over Donovan Mitchell and picked him up off the floor. And I got to thinking, here's the bubble effect. I was like, I wanted to know what Donovan Mitchell was thinking, because I think a lot of people would say Donovan Mitchell was thinking, man, we just got eliminated and woe is me, you know, we put it all on the line. I didn't have that thinking. My thinking was, because he, you know, he wasn't like emotionally upset. He just kind of was like, I almost felt like he was relieved. Mm-hmm. I almost felt like I can go home and see family and friends now. You know, losing in the NBA playoffs is never great. But if there's ever a time for it to be okay, would be now. When you're in a bubble for an extended period of time, winning a series makes you stay in the bubble another week to 2 weeks. And then winning a championship makes you stay in the bubble an extra almost a month. And you think about these guys, they went back July 24th, 20th, somewhere in that range. They've now been there about 6 weeks. And I would have to look at the entire schedule here in regards to when the season actually ends. But the two teams that play in the NBA Finals are going to be in that bubble for an extremely long amount of time. And so I thought about that with Dame Lillard and the Blazers. You know, they lost, although they were, you know, lost 4-1. But, hey, you know, we lost, but, hey, we could get out of this bubble. And I kind of thought about that with Donovan Mitchell yesterday. Like, he was, like, relieved maybe or just spent. And, yeah, he was disappointed they lost. But you got a nice parting gift, and that's you get to go home and get out of the bubble and reconnect with what's happening in the real world. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not all bad that you lose a game seven. Now, in the past, it'd be a much different story, but the way things are now, I think you lose game seven, you don't spend a lot of time worrying about it as much as you normally would. I mean, you're a participant, yeah. You're a competitor, you want to win, don't get me wrong, but there's a much bigger prize than normal by losing.
Yeah, you're not going to dwell on it, I don't think, if any team that gets beat out at this point in time. I mean, like say, obviously, anybody that's there, and if you've made it this far, you want to win a championship, that's the ultimate goal. But, you know, you're not going to sit here and just, oh, woe is me. I'm going to feel bad for myself for a week after this because we lost. Well, you do. You get to go home. And there's been all kinds of things going on right all over the world right now. So it's like, you know, just we'll move on and go home and call it good.
Yeah, and I think that was a little bit of that. That's what I read between the lines last night. But it was nice of Murray to come over. Of course, if you have a home court celebration or anything, I don't know if Murray comes all the way over and grabs Mitchell because there's a lot of hubbub. Yeah. There's media coming out to interview you left and right. And that was a nice touch, though, by Jamal Murray. Those two guys are so young and so talented, and they could have a lot of battles in the future in the Western Conference. Well, people talk about the Lakers, the Clippers, the teams to beat, and there's talk about the Bucks, and we've even talked about the Raptors. But the team maybe to beat is not the Lakers or the Clippers or the Bucks or the Raptors. It may very well be the Boston Celtics. Celtics yesterday were down 12 to the Raptors. Marcus Smart, 19 points. What's gotten into him? He had 5 3-pointers. 16 of his 19 points in the fourth quarter. He had 3 points all game. Fourth quarter, explodes for 16. Jason Tatum, who is just an absolute star now and a stud, 34 points and 8 rebounds. Celtics rallied and beat the Raptors yesterday, 102-99. Celtics up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference semifinals. The Celtics haven't lost a game yet in the bubble in regards to the playoffs. They're 6-0. Tonight, game two, the Bucks need to bounce back. They're down 1-0 to the Heat. That's at 5:30 on ESPN. And the Thunder and the Rockets, I'm telling you, can you imagine the headlines if the Thunder beat the Rockets tonight? My goodness, Thunder fans are going to have so much fun with Rocket fans. If Rocket fans win, they really have nothing to gloat about. They're expected to win. They're expected to compete for a championship. If the Thunder win tonight, the Rocket fans are not going to hear the end of it. And Rockets management won't hear the end of it. The media won't let them hear the end of it. I guarantee you in Houston they won't. And the Thunder media is going to just be enjoying it. And the fans will enjoy it. And remember, the season all came to an end, oddly enough, at Oklahoma City. That's when the season, in essence, ended. Yeah. When Rudy Gobert tested positive, that put a kibosh. There was a few other games. There was one more game later on the West Coast that they were notified they weren't going to play because of that positive test for Rudy Gobert. And now the Thunder have come almost full circle here, a chance to win Game 7 and knock out the Rockets. And if you're a Houston Rocket fan right now, you got to be so worried about tonight because you have everything to lose. I mean everything. You have your season to lose. You have, I think you're going to lose your head coach if you lose. There's rumors Mike D'Antoni may go elsewhere. Their teams are interested in him, like the Indiana Pacers. The Rockets have so much pressure on themselves tonight. And the Thunder, I think, are playing with house money. If they lose, big deal. If they overachieve, nobody thought they'd even make the playoffs, let alone go Game 7 against the Rockets. Rockets, you know, the small ball doesn't work. Three-point shooting doesn't work. Blow it up. D'Antoni can't win at all with that system. And I truly believe he can't. And
hasn't
nobody
worked out for him.
Hasn't worked so far. Although, let's be honest, Chris Paul didn't pull a hammy a couple years ago. It might have. It might have worked. And we'll never know. But the Rockets and the Thunder, Game 7 tonight. We were talking yesterday on the show about luck, legacies and luck. Marty Schottenheimer doesn't have the legacy that, obviously Bill Belichick has. But Marty Schottenheimer had a ton of success. You know, Andy Reid, his legacy is profound now because he won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But had he not won last year, the knock on Reid would still be, can't win the big one. And you look at last night, we were talking about luck. Utah Jazz Mike Conley had a nice look at three, shot the ball as well as you could, halfway down and out, and your season's over. That ball spins a little differently. Sometimes that thing goes around and stays in. Sometimes it comes out. Little bit of spin, And that's the difference between the Nuggets moving on and the Jazz being done. It takes some fortuitous luck. And some people say you make your own breaks, you make your own luck. Whether you believe that or not, I don't know. But pretty interesting stuff. We're talking about how it's a thin line. It's razor thin between winning and losing. Boy, we saw that last night, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Man.
It's, well, luck, too. I mean, and I had a discussion with my cousin about the play there at the end that they were talking about, you know, pull it out, use some more time instead of going for the layup. I think a lot of teams are in that fast break mode, mm-hmm. and would do the same thing the Nuggets did.
I think most would. I don't think everyone would, though.
You talk about luck.
Experienced point guards, I think, would have pulled that.
Yeah, but what
Chris
I'm saying.
Chris Paul, I think, would have pulled that.
Yeah, what I'm saying, though, is if we're talking about luck mm-hmm. on that side
right.
of it, if the layup goes in,
it's over.
There's 5 seconds left.
Right.
They have no timeouts. They
got to
get the ball, go down. They got to heave a three and hope there's a foul.
Sure.
So luck was not on the Nuggets side at that point right
True.
There.
True.
Because that in essence, ends the game. And I don't think a lot of people are saying it's a bad shot if it goes in or saying they should have pulled it out.
To me, it's not a bad shot.
Yeah.
He should have made it. It was a layup.
It's
a bad decision
yeah.
to push in that situation up to, I'm like with Mark Jassin, you pull that out.
Yeah,
now, it's not easy.
You can do that
it's not easy
yeah.
to do that because you're thinking
when
you're playing basketball
break,
and you got a
yeah.
break, you think you got a dunk and a layup to seal the deal. So I'm not blaming Jamal Murray for pushing it and doing what he did because they had numbers. There's no doubt. The shot wasn't bad. The decision was a little bit questionable because you can pull it out or whatever. You know, it's like a football player in a game where you're up, what is it, one or whatever, and you get a touchdown, and you're still only up one possession,
mm-hmm.
you know? And Todd Gurley's done it for where he's slid to a stop
sure.
at the five because that ended the game, and people are like, why didn't he score? Well, if he scores, he gives the other team a chance to get to return the kickoff, and then they get two, and they get tied.
Mm-hmm.
So he did the right thing. But not a lot of guys are that sharp and that talented to think, oh, my, I got to give up a touchdown for my stat line so I can make sure my team wins. And then there are selfish players that probably they know, but they don't care because
yeah.
they're like, I'm going to get mine to touchdown anyway. That's quick thinking. You got to be prepared and planning for that. And in basketball, it's even – there's less time to think about it, especially in a situation like that with
the
scramble at the end.
If they had the ball – instead of, getting the steal and then having a fast break, it's a totally different situation.
Oh,
like
sure.
But it is like a, especially like you said, a younger point guard too.
Yeah.
And like
remember, he's 23.
Maybe like a Chris Paul would think of.
That's what I said.
Okay, I didn't hear you say
I
his
said
name.
Chris Paul would probably pull that out.
So maybe like a guy like that would.
LeBron,
like Tony Parker. You know,
LeBron
the end
would
of
pull
his
that
career,
out. I'm
you know.
Sure.
But so many people that are going to do the exact same thing when they have three, maybe even four on one right at the start, four on two.
It was about four on one and half court.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and they're just going to run. They're going to run they're not going to run their secondary break and throw it to the wing and waste time. They're going to that's what I was talking with my cousin about. I'm like, I get where everybody's coming from.
Sure, and I'm not critical of it.
Use some time.
Yeah, no.
But, man, he was just like, they should have done this, they should have done that. I'm like, Jamal Murray's not even looking over at this wing.
Sure,
He's looking to drive.
Listen,
that's where it starts. Whoever's got the ball to start has to make that decision.
And I haven't seen a lot of criticism about it. I just think that Mark Jackson accurately pointed out.
Sure.
Because when I first watched it, I thought the same thing, get the bucket and end it. But then once Mark Jackson said that, I'm like, oh, you know what, he's right. You know, you pull it out, and then you burn a little bit more time. And what that does, the reason that's the better decision is because, one, you pull it out, and you're going to burn a little bit more time. Two, you get fouled. Murray's going to have the ball. He's a great foul shooter, so you're probably going to seal it. But even if you don't seal it, let's say he makes one out of two and you're up three, you can set your defense, and the Jazz have to go full court with 3 seconds to go because they're out of timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you might not seal it at the foul line, you could seal it with a layup and a dunk, don't get me wrong, but you can at least set up your defense. You can make sure they don't shoot a three, or you can push them out with pressure, and you can set everything up because they had to go full court. The Jazz were out of timeouts. They couldn't advance the ball. So there's many, and then he put it, of course, Murray keep the ball. He's a great foul shooter. Hits two free throws, game over anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are many more positives to take out of pulling the ball out, but that's easy for me to say because I'm sitting on my couch.
It's like it's that split second decision,
and it comes with experience.
Yeah,
like I said, I think you're right. You know, Chris Paul, Tony Parker, Chauncey Billups in his day. I think LeBron, he's basically a point guard, point forward. I think all those guys would pull the ball out. They would realize and they'd pull it out. Now, we don't know for sure, but I think they would because they've been in those situations before. Jamal Murray, I think, is 23, 24 at the most. He hasn't been in that type of situation, and he's excited. You know that. He plays a lot of energy. And I don't have a problem with the team trying to finish it. And if the guy makes a layup, We're not even talking about it anyway.
That's what I'm saying. It's like nobody talks about
it. If he makes a layup,
nobody's even talking about it was the wrong decision.
If they make the layup.
Not about the shot. I saw the thing that bugged me is I saw somebody like write a story in an article that compared it to the J.R. Smith thing.
Oh, no, not even close.
Not even close. They were going for the win. J.R. Smith had no idea what the situation was.
They weren't ready to shoot the ball.
They knew what it was. They were going for the win and the kill shot, basically, is what you would call it.
Right.
It's, again, it's a bunch. Money layup that if you make, the
if you
game's
make it,
over.
Nobody's talking.
There's
about
no
it.
Chance for them to score. Well, I mean, unless you're not smart like J.R. Smith and foul or something, and they make a three and you send them to the line.
Right. Yeah.
But it's for all intents and purposes, with 5 seconds left when that ball goes through, the game is over.
I think in the future, Jamal Murray will pull that out.
Yeah.
That'll be the experience.
He'll learn from it.
He'll learn from it.
Yeah.
So
and maybe have a different idea of what he should do next time. But
yeah. I mean, it comes with experience.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I wasn't like upset about it at all when it happened. I was just like, oh my gosh, how did he blow the layup? And then I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to lose.
Yeah, it almost bit them. I mean, there's no question.
Oh, can you imagine if Conley's shot goes in, Jamal Murray can catch a lot more heat.
Oh,
the Nuggets for
sure.
Not pulling it out would be even worse than what we're talking
without
about.
Without a doubt.
And if the layup goes in, nobody's even talking about it.
Nobody says a darn word about it.
Isn't it amazing how that works? Amazing. It was exciting. It wasn't as high scoring as we thought, but it was still an exciting game. Coming up, a resident telling us what we really need to work on and fix in society today. You don't want to miss that. That's coming up here in a moment. Hey, we got some local high school sports scores to share. And also coming up, Ben Letourneau, St. John's Tipton cross-country coach, will join us. Dusty's got the scores from last night.
Yeah, volleyball results from last night. St. John's Tipton wins both of their matches in their triangular in Beloit. They beat Natoma in two and went over Rock Hills in two. And Rock Hills over Natoma in two in the other match. So St. John's Tipton starts the season 3-0. Rock Hills 1-1 with their matches last night. Lakeside volleyball team starts the season at 2-0. They won in two over Osborne and then beat Pike Valley in two as well. Osborne picked up their first win of the season there in the first match of the evening, winning over Pike Valley in three. At the Sylvan Lucas Triangular, Thunder Ridge now 4-0 as they won their two matches in three. They beat Southern Cloud in their first match and then won over Sylvan Lucas in the nightcap there in Sylvan Grove last night. Also, Lincoln starts the season 2-0. They won over Tescott in two at the Chase Triangular and then beat Chase in two. And then Smith Center was supposed to play Trigo and Plainville last night, but Plainville couldn't play because they have some COVID issues there for their volleyball team. So it was a double match against Trigo, and Smith Center won both of those. They won both of them in two. So Smith Center starts the season at 2-0 as well. If you missed those scores and complete scores from NCAA last night, we'll have them updated as far as we have right now, and we'll hope to get all of them updated at nckssports.com. For high school volleyball last night. There was also some high school tennis yesterday in Phillipsburg, and the round robin there, Beloit and Osborne were competing. The highest individual from the area was Blair Walters of Osborne, who finished fourth in number one singles. You can find the full results from that Phillipsburg round robin also at nckssports.com. Now, just a couple quick programming reminders. We do have high school football locker room chats coming up tonight, as we'll have our first chats with the high school football coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge this evening, and that'll be around 5:10. And you can also listen to those online at katycountry94.com, and we'll continue on with our locker room chats tomorrow night with coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas. So we're looking forward to hearing about that from all the football coaches here tonight and tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Hey, coming up, Ben Letourneau, St. John's Tipton cross-country coach, here in just a moment. Also coming up on the show, we'll give you the kickoff times for KU and K-State's first football game. And the Chiefs got their Super Bowl rings, but it's the other ring that people are talking about today. I'll explain that. And the Royals got rolled last night, but there is something positive to talk about from a 10-1 shellacking. Let's see. I've got a Jayhawk fan texting me. Remember when Tyshawn Taylor dunked one against Purdue in the 2012 tournament, and then Purdue had a chance to tie it up, and they nearly banked in a three, and it would have went in overtime? I do remember that. And I remember, you know, and that's one of the things. You have a dunk in front of you. It's hard to criticize, especially at college even. Mm-hmm. And we're talking pro with Jamal Murray, and he's still a young guy. But when we're talking college, you got nobody in front of you. You have a chance to go dunk it and get 2 points. You're guaranteeing that you don't lose in regulation. But if he wouldn't have dunked it and would have milked clock and pulled it out, it had been probably better, and Purdue, had they banked that in, that would have been super criticized, and they nearly did. Mm-hmm. And that was the NCAA tournament when your season's on the line, just like last night between the Nuggets and the Jazz. So, yeah, I mean, and you try to go through those situations, and you can coach it as much as you possibly can. You can preach it day and night as a coach, and your players may or may not do what they're supposed to do in a situation like that because they've taught in their whole lives of playing basketball, hey, Nobody in front of me. Go dunk it. Yeah. Go score.
Fast break. It's the first option. You don't go to the secondary option
on a fast break like that. Exactly. You know, Todd Gurley, that's what makes what Todd Gurley does so great. Is Brian Westbrook did it one time, too, is, you know, the fact to give up stats for yourself because you're trained to score touchdowns as a running back, and then for you to give up a touchdown so you can make sure that you score, don't score, so your team wins the game is just – it's insane how that works. And I brought this up yesterday, and I will never forget this. And I saw the video and the audio on NFL Films, and I'll give you the story in case you missed it. And then you're going to hear from a very important resident talking about a horrible epidemic that is facing our country, and it's not COVID-19. You don't want to miss this. It's coming up in a moment. That's called a tease in our industry. Marty Schottenheimer, his last year as an NFL football coach, the San Diego Chargers went 14-2. They were the number one seed in the playoffs in the AFC, and they hosted Tom Brady and the New England Patriots in San Diego. And in that game, it was tight, but San Diego led most of the way, and the Patriots were going down the field late in the game for trying to win the game with a touchdown. I can't remember exactly what the score was. And Marty Schottenheimer went to his defensive players during a break or change of possession. He went to his defensive players, and he told them, NFL Films captured this. And he told the players, and specifically he told one defensive back, but he told them all. He said, you pick off the ball, go to the ground. Take a knee, go to the ground. He said that.
Yeah.
Marty Schottenheimer is a great coach, or a good coach. If you say not great because he hasn't won a Super Bowl, fine. But he's a really, really good coach. Yeah. We can agree on that. And so Marty Schottenheimer has a team that's 14-2. And guess what happens? Tom Brady throws the interception. And I forgot the name of the defensive back for the Chargers who made the interception, but guess what he did?
He did not go to the ground.
He did not do what the coach told him to do. He apparently thought he was more important than the team. He put I in front of, or me, and there is me in team, like Kobe Bryant said. There's no I. But there is no I in team. He put himself above the team. After they worked all year long to go 14-2, Marty Schottenheimer, it's not like he didn't know the situation, the defensive player. Marty had just gone over it. Marlon McCree?
It was the guy that intercepted it.
Okay, yeah. So he intercepted it. Does it say about what time he picked that off or whatever? It was late in the game.
Yeah.
So he picks off a Tom Brady pass, and the Chargers, they take a knee. The game's basically over. Instead, he picks it off, and he decides he's going to run it back or run the ball, which he didn't have a clear path to have an easy interception return for a touchdown, by the way. Yeah. Lots of people in front of him. Mm-hmm. He decides to try to return it for some unforeseen reason other than being selfish. And he fumbled the ball. He fumbles the ball. The Patriots recover. Guess what? Fresh set of downs. Patriots go score a touchdown, and the Chargers lose. And a week later, Marty Schottenheimer, after going 14-2, is fired because he and the upper administration didn't get along, him and the owner.
Yeah.
Because a guy decided he was more important than the whole organization and team, Marlon McCree. And it's one thing if he didn't do it because nobody told him. NFL Films has it on film. You can hear it. You can see Marty telling all the players, and he's telling him in particular, you get an interception or a fumble, you go down. And the guy defied the coach, did it anyway, and cost him the season, and honestly cost Marty Schottenheimer his job in a roundabout way, although people said the Chargers won the Super Bowl that year. He might have been gone anyway.
Yeah, that was
the owner.
Only even possible way to save his job would have been if they would have won the Super
Bowl.
Right,
because they didn't get along. Yeah. Even though Marty Schottenheimer is 14-2, that wasn't good enough for the owner of the Chargers. You got more details on that?
It was eight. They were down eight, or the Chargers were up eight with 8 minutes left.
With 8 minutes
when
left?
The interception happened.
Okay,
so
there's more time than I thought.
But you get it, you go down. And
it changes a lot.
What happens is you don't – Troy Brown knocks it out and you fumble – and you go to the Patriots go down and score the touchdown on the two-pointer, and then they have time for another possession, too, and make a field goal. And then the Chargers missed one with, like, a minute left, 54-yard attempt. It was a tough one. And
so it wasn't quite as late as I thought it was.
I thought it was a little later than that, too.
But still, that's an example of if that guy just does what he's told.
Yes.
And that's what I go back. Tyshawn Taylor, you know, if Bill Self had told him, dude, if you have an easy layup, do not go take it, pull it out, and then he did that, then you should criticize Tyshawn more. But when you're in the heat of the moment to defend the athlete, and you're heat in the moment, and you got a chance to get a steal and a dunk, you usually take it. And, you know, we got a chance at a 4-on-1 fast break, you usually take it. And that's what we're talking about with the Nuggets, Tyshawn Taylor in 2012 against Purdue. And then the one that doesn't fit as much is the guy with the interception but didn't have a clear path for a touchdown. He didn't, and then he lost the ball after being told, go down.
Exactly, after being told by the coach,
yes, to go down. He did not listen to the coach and cost his team, in essence, a chance to move on to the playoffs. So, see, coaches do know a few things. All right, Ben Letourneau, speaking of coaches, we'll be coming up here in just a moment, but I'm really excited about playing this. Ladies and gentlemen, rip from the headlines. Lost in all the COVID-19 talk, there is something that really needs to be addressed. And there's a citizen that has made it very clear and very eloquently has put it. It's out there on Twitter. I'll pull it up right now. You can listen for yourself, and you can decide whether or not this is something to lose sleep about tonight. It's something that people don't discuss, but maybe we should.
Lincoln has the opportunity to be a social leader in this country. We have been casually ignoring a problem that has gotten so out of control that our children are throwing around names and words without even understanding their true meaning and treating things as though they're normal. I go into nice family restaurants and I see people throwing this name around and pretending as though everything is just fine. I'm talking about boneless chicken wings. I propose that we as a city remove the... I propose that we as a city remove the name boneless wings from our menus and from our hearts. These are our reasons why. Number one, nothing about boneless chicken wings actually come from the wing of a chicken. We would be disgusted if a butcher was mislabeling their cuts of meats, but then we go around and pretending as though the breast of the chicken is its wing. Number two, boneless chicken wings are just chicken tenders, which are already boneless. I don't go to order boneless tacos. I don't go and order boneless club sandwiches. I don't ask for boneless auto repair. It's just what's expected. And then number three, we need to raise our children better. Our children are raised being afraid of having bones attached to their meat. That's where meat comes from. It grows on bones. We need to teach them that the wing of a chicken is from a chicken and it's delicious. I propose that we rename boneless wings in the city of Lincoln. We can call them buffalo-style chicken tenders. We can call them wet tenders. We can call them saucy nugs or trash. We can take these steps and show the country that where we stand and that we understand that we've been living a lie for far too long. And we know it because we feel it in our bones.
I laughed when I saw that, and I'm laughing and crying now because the line that stands out to me in that whole thing, he casually says, "Or trash. We can call them trash." I have never understood the boneless part. I've never understood that.
The
boneless chicken wings, I'm like, really? Because I don't, what?
Always said, of course, it depends on how big they are, but like, sure. If you get them at Buffalo Wild Wings, I've always said, boneless wings are chicken nuggets.
Yes, that's what they are. Chicken tenders, as this guy says. Yeah.
If they're a little bit bigger, they're tenders. If they're the smaller wings, they're nuggets. And it's like, I've never understood that. I've never put it like he did in a funny way like that. Yeah. But I've always said that here for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, they have flavor, but let's call them what they are.
Exactly.
They're not wings.
I like
wings that are on drummies or you know.
He closed it well. I feel it in my bones or something like that. Yeah, you know. I thought that was pretty funny, too. Good stuff from that resident. So there you go. Something to worry about, you know. Let's talk about the really important things in life. And let's deal with this boneless chicken wing situation. Wichita Public Schools Board of Education, they had an about-face. They voted 6-1 to approve a proposal overturning its August 20th decision to cancel all fall activities. Football, volleyball, boys soccer, and other fall sports are back at USD 259 in Wichita. USD 259, that school district, oversees over 50,000 students. And that's a big, big deal that came out of Wichita last night.
Yes.
All right. We don't have any sports today, but we went over the locker room chats for today and tomorrow. We'll have volleyball live streaming of Beloit against Ellsworth and Ellenwood tomorrow evening beginning at 5 o'clock on ncksports.com via Beloit Trojan Channel. Friday, we'll have the Football Express at 5:40 brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable. We'll have that and everything else the rest of the night on both our radio stations, simulcast on Katie Couch 94 and Z96.3 Lake. Pregame at 6:30. Osborne hosting Hill City. Dusty and Todd will have the call from Osborne. And then after the game, we'll have the local high school scoreboard show at 10:05 brought to you by State Farm Insurance. In Beloit and Osborne. That'll be on both stations as well. And we'll have the Beloit at Republic County football game on Friday. That will be on our live video stream at ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan Channel. And we'll have full play-by-play with that video streaming broadcast. So we are getting busy, and we're excited about all of that. All right, Dusty, we've got a coach, another local coach to talk to you today.
Yeah, Ben Letourneau joining us today to talk St. John's cross country. The Blue Jays have had a lot of success in the past as far as on the boys' side of team-wise in cross country, but a little bit lower on numbers this year, so maybe not having a chance for the team championship in 1A or anything like that. But they do have a great athlete in Caleb Eilert, who was the defending state champion in 1A cross country, and we'll hear about him and how he's looking right now and how the rest of the Blue Jay cross country team is faring here early this season. And welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Ben Letourneau with us, the head coach of the St. John's cross country team there in Beloit. Ben, first of all, thanks for taking some time to join us. As far as what you have coming back from last year, you did return your state champion in Class 1A on the boys' side there, Caleb Eilert, back for his senior year. You do have three other boys out this year, three girls out. How have practices been going so far for you as you get ready for the 2020 season?
Going pretty good. Last week was pretty brutal as far as the heat went, so this week's cool down is definitely welcome. You know, makes it a lot easier to push a little harder in practice and get some good work in when it's not quite so hot. We've got our first meet coming up this Thursday in Concordia on September 3rd, so we're excited to see how the competition is going to look like this year. Obviously, like all sports, things are going to be a little bit different. With ours, for the most part, things is going to be pretty much the same. You know, where everything's outdoors and we're all just out on a golf course for the most part, so it's pretty easy to keep spread apart, and it'll just be interesting to see how each individual school hosts their races.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, you got Caleb coming back, the defending state champion there in 1A on the boys' side. How's he looking right now, and does he look like he's on track to possibly repeat in that realm?
He's looking really good. You know, we kind of wondered with not having a track season, that can kind of throw kids off a little bit. But he's really coming along really quickly. He's strong. He's worked hard over the summer, and he's getting his fitness and his shape back really quickly just from some workouts that he's done. I think he's right on course for the way that he was running last year. So I'm looking forward to it. He's definitely driven. He's wanting to repeat as a state champion this year, so that's going to be the goal.
You talked and brought up already, you know, some of the differences, I guess, you might see with COVID-19 and some of the different, you know, protocols that are in place. Does that affect you at practice at all? Or that would just be more of a, once you get to the event, find out what they're doing type of thing?
It'll mostly be at the events. And, mm-hmm. You know, for example, Concordia this week, it looks like everything's going to be fairly similar to the way that it's been in the past. But for Washington County next week, we just got the announcement sheet of how they're going to run things, and they're going to do it in staged or wave starts. So like everybody's first runner will start, and then 30 seconds later everybody's second runner will start, and then the third and the fourth and so on. So just a lot different way to run a race, and if kids are used to running together with their team, you know, they're not going to have that. So going to be a little bit of just changed how they're going to perform. And I think they'll still be able to run just as well as they always have. It's going to be different. So,
as a coach, do you feel like there's any disadvantage there, though? Because, you know, a lot of times you guys do pace each other when you're out on the course as a team, right?
Yeah, so I am a little bit concerned about that, because if you have a couple, we've got a couple of girls that have been running really well together, Elizabeth Meyer and Jane Letourneau. They're very well matched. I mean, my plan for them this season was to have them work together in races as much as they can, because if you've got a teammate that's just right there beside you pushing you throughout the whole race, you can run a lot better time than if you're just kind of on your own. That'll change on the races that we have to run in that way. So I guess we'll just have to take that as it comes, and it'll be that kind of thing for all the teams. So it's not like we'll have a disadvantage over somebody else.
Again, you open out with Concordia there coming up on Thursday. What do you typically see competition-wise there, and what do you expect it to be this year?
It'll be a little different this year. Bueller has always been at that meet in the past, and they're always a strong team. They have several on the boys and girls side that have placed really high in 4A state. So without them there, we do have, you know, Beloit is there and Clay Center and Concordia. So there's some bigger schools, and that usually brings some competition. So, but Buehler is always kind of the powerhouse that the Concordia needs. Without them, I don't know that Caleb will necessarily have much for competition there. I mean, we don't want to discount some of those other teams, but I just don't know of others. I know Clay Center has always had some really good runners in the past, but they graduated their better ones last year. On the girls' side, there will be some good ones there, so it'll probably be pretty competitive for the girls.
And Ben Letourneau with us, the head coach of the St. John's Blue Jay cross country team. Ben, we certainly thank you for taking some time. I know things are a little bit different no matter what when you go out there and compete, so we wish you the best of luck this year, and we'll chat with you down the road, all right?
All right, thanks a lot, Dusty.
All right, so we are, it is different, isn't it? I mean, you think about, you ask questions during that interview that you probably never thought you'd ask about cross country.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why can't you run together if you pace yourself? How much does that hurt you? And yeah, all kinds of sports, you're asking questions like, what do you do here that are just so much different than what we usually ask in interviews? How fast is this kid running? And where are they going to finish? And then you got to ask serious stuff about, are you social distancing while you're doing your practice and things of that nature? And it's weird all the way around, but like I said, most coaches are answering, you know, we're doing all this because we want to play, and the kids are just happy to be out there, so they'll do whatever basically we tell them to do to give them the opportunity to compete.
No doubt. So we appreciate all the local coaches. We have anybody tomorrow that we're going to have?
We have another cross-country coach lined up. As long as I get it recorded, we should have another one tomorrow.
All right, that sounds good. And then Friday, we'll preview high school football and everything else that will be taking place. Our full schedule posted at ncksports.com. The results that Dusty mentioned with volleyball and everything else posted as well at ncksports.com. And those interviews we've had with all the local coaches are available at kdcountry94.com. All right, yesterday, the Kansas City Chiefs, it wasn't kind of the way they had dreamt it of happening, but it still was kind of cool what they did, and that was the Chiefs were able to get their Super Bowl rings. Each Chief was at a small table on Arrowhead, there on the field, and they had video cameras, whatever, kind of production, and everybody got their rings. They're very sharp and very cool, as you can imagine. First time in 50 years the Chiefs have won the Super Bowl. So that's a big deal. But Patrick Mahomes is just, you know, what does this guy not do right? The guy proposed when he gets his big ring, then he decides to give a ring to his longtime girlfriend, now fiance, Brittany Matthews. I understand she said yes, apparently.
Yeah.
Stunned by that. Yeah. Well, you know, can you just see this conversation? Okay, Patrick, but what can you offer me?
Yeah.
And Patrick would say, I don't know, is $503 million enough to grab your attention? Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good. I'll marry you. If Patrick Mahomes asked to marry me, I might just say yes. I mean, $503 million, no offense to my wife, but $503 million, you know. I'm kidding. Money isn't everything. But, boy, that's a lot of money. Anywho, Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and Dusty's wearing his Chiefs shirt today, and he's very proudful. Proudful,
yes.
Whatever I'm trying to say. The Chiefs got their Super Bowl rings yesterday, and Mahomes popped the question, did it in a really cool style, and so forth and so on. So Mahomes gets a ring, as do all the Chiefs members of our organization yesterday in a ceremony, and his longtime girlfriend Brittany Matthews now gets her nice big ring. And how did he do this here? He had an impressive floor arrangement inside a room in the stadium. The proposal featured giant letters lit up by individual lights spelling out, "Will you marry me?" in all caps. And then she showed a picture of the ring that he gave her. Of course, they have dated for a long, long time. They dated when they were teenagers, which sounds funny when you say when they were teenagers. It wasn't that long ago they were teenagers. She was a junior, and Mahomes was a sophomore at White House, Texas, and they've been together ever since. So we hope it all works out for them. There you go. Patrick Mahomes, Brittany Matthews, they are engaged. She is now the fiance. So sorry, ladies, if you had any. I guess technically, until they get married, there's still a chance, I guess. But
how about I get you a ring that costs more than the one I just got?
Yeah, no kidding. I've got my ring. I will raise this ring and give you a bigger ring, even brighter and shinier.
It's funny, on his Instagram story, he says ring season, and the only ring he's got on his Instagram story is the one that he gave to her. Like,
yeah.
Every Chiefs player almost has some kind of Instagram story with, you know, getting their rings and everything like that.
Yeah.
His is just that one. That's all it is, which, you know, yeah. I guess he's got his priorities right.
Listen, this is the way it's supposedly supposed to happen. He's going to play football for at least, you know, 12 more years based on his contract. He's not going to play football forever, but he hopefully, Brittany Matthews will be his wife for the rest of his life.
Yes.
He'll spend the rest of his life with her, and that'll be well beyond 12 years. So that is a bigger thing in life, and that's probably the more important ring. Unless, you know, they get divorced or something. Then you'll go, wow, why did I do that? let's see here. KU, K-State, they know their first game kickoff times on September the 12th. KU will open up at 9 p.m. 9 p.m. I'm old. That's a little late for me. College football games last 16 hours, don't they?
Yeah.
About 3.5 or 4 sometimes. So I got to stay up till 12:30 to watch that. I don't have to. I don't have to. Athletic Director Jeff Longstead and KU release, we have players from all across the country on our football team and playing on FS1 in the 9 p.m. time slot will provide their families and KU football fans the opportunity to watch. While it may be a later kickoff than we're accustomed to, Coach Miles and the team are excited to play in front of a national audience to start the season. That'll be against Coastal Carolina, who beat KU in Les Miles' first season, 12-7, which was a barn burner of a game. So, and that was an evening game as well, if you remember that. So, KU last year, 5 of their 12 games were 11 a.m. kickoff, but this one normally would have been 11 a.m. kickoff, but because of, you know, Big Ten, Pac-12 not playing this and that and so forth and so on, they're going to play at 9 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. The Big 12 opener at Baylor, that time has not been announced for KU football. K-State knows their times for their opener, September 12th against Arkansas State. That's 2:30 p.m. on FS1. And then, of course, they have a bye week, and then they start Big 12 conference play at Oklahoma. That'll be 11 a.m. on the mainstream Fox, not FS1, but Fox. So that's a huge game, K-State, to have a lot of people watching them against Oklahoma on that September 26th. By the way, Spencer Rattler was named the starting quarterback for the Sooners. No shocker there. He is a dynamic player. Toby Rowland, the voice of the Sooners, with us a few weeks ago and said that's who it probably will be. It was announced officially yesterday, kind of like Lincoln Riley talking about how Jalen Hurts has got to fight for the job, da-da-da-da-da. We knew when he transferred to Oklahoma he'd be the starting quarterback. Everybody knew Spencer Rattler was going to be the starting quarterback this year, but that'll be only his second start as a Sooner and his first Big 12 start against K-State. So that could be a good time for K-State to play Oklahoma. Now watch the Sooners go out and win 55-0. What was that final a few years ago, Bill Snyder?
It was
something like that,
55,
wasn't it? Was it 55-0?
Yeah.
I know it was bad.
My worst experience in that stadium, for sure.
You were at that game?
Oh, yeah.
I forgot that you were at
that game. I was cushy in the press box. People were getting cold out on the field, and that all factored into it.
Sure.
But I don't think it was the cold that had, like, about 2,000 fans probably left at the end of the game.
Yeah.
55-0.
Definitely
score.
Wasn't much purple.
If they're
left.
Up 55-0, you know, there might have been a few more. If it's a close game, nobody left.
Yeah, that game, if I remember correctly, was over before it started. Yeah, Clover remembers 55-0 right away.
Yeah.
He remembers, of course he does. And of course you're gonna remember when your team gets slack 55-0 too. Okay, the Royals were in action last night. We'll give you two highlights. Here's one.
Dozier cranks it to deep right field. Naquin will not get this one, and Hunter Dozier gets the Royals on the board with home run number 4, and that's his first hit of the night.
Okay, that was one positive. Now for the bad, and I'll give you another positive. Bookend positives, ready? Matt Harvey, not positive last night, and I didn't think he was going to be that good. I didn't think it was a big deal. The Royals picked him up, and so far it's been proven correct. He doesn't have anything left. He lasted an inning and a third, gave up 6 hits, 5 runs, 3 home runs. The 10 batted balls against Harvey exited at 96 miles per hour, which means he was hit hard. He goes, it just kind of fell apart really quickly. It felt this week that I had figured some stuff out. I was pretty excited to go out tonight and show that, but clearly it didn't happen. Obviously it didn't. So Matt Harvey pretty soon, I think, will be not on this team if he's going to pitch like that, obviously. The big bright spot for the Royals was the rookie Carlos Hernandez, 23-year-old right-hander, came in and went 3 2/3 scoreless innings. He's 6'4", 250, and he had never pitched in any games above Class A, but he was plopped on the 40-man roster last fall to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. He started 41 of his 42 minor league outings, projects as a potential starter, has a four-seam fastball that is about 95 to 99 miles an hour. And, man, he was very impressive, even though there's not as much pressure when you're down early by a lot because of Matt Harvey. Still, pretty impressive for a guy, 23, who hadn't played above A-ball, to go out and, in essence, dominate A pretty good team in the Cleveland Indians, 3 2/3 scoreless. Here's Mike Matheny on the young right-hander.
I liked everything I saw. Just didn't look rattled when he came in. It just looked like another day at work, you know. And, you know, he gave a little smile because I made him. But, you know, and every time these guys step on a major league mound for the first time, they need to acknowledge that this is something really special. And there's a whole lot that they've done and a whole lot from support back home and all over who've helped to make that a special day. And so he and then he just took over.
That's the future of the Royals. It's their pitching. We mentioned you got Brady Singer, Chris Bubich, who are in the rotation now, and they're very inexperienced, but they're getting valuable experience now. You've got Carlos Hernandez, who they really like. He's 23. Coar. You got Lynch. And then, of course, Asa Lacy, who is their number one pick, who I think you still might see pitch here at the Bigs at the end of September, possibly, although if they're not in it, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But he looks like a dominant left-hander. And those are just a few of the arms the Royals have in their organization in the minors. So if you're a Royals fan and you're frustrated with losing, and the Royals are 14-22, and you're frustrated and you don't know if this team's going the right direction, it's all going to depend on how these pitchers pan out at the big league level. These young arms, very talented guys, they can throw hard, but they got great stuff. And their mental makeup, I think, is something that the Dayton Moore really focused on when they made their drafts picks. And I think all these guys are pretty tough mentally. Mm-hmm. You know, Brady Singer doesn't flinch when something bad happens. Chris Bubich has done a good job hanging in there. And the Hernandez kid looked great last night. Now, granted, first time and they were down and he can maybe relax a little bit. You know, what Lynch can do, a left-hander. You got Coar they like. And then Lacy's a lefty. I mean, the future is very bright for the Royals. And not all those guys are going to pan out, per se. There'll probably be a few that might have to go to the bullpen. There might be a guy that blows his arm out. There might be somebody who just can't get it done. And then you eventually trade him and you don't remember you even drafted him. But that is the future for the Royals. They are only going to go as far as that young pitching is going to take them. And lost in what I just said is Brad Keller's 25. And that's your ace right now. So think about your rotation. It could be Keller, 25. Hernandez, 23. Singer, I think, is 23. And then Bubich is 22 or 23. I don't know how old he is. He's very young. And then you got other guys down the line that maybe are coming up. So we've talked about how the Royals have been starving for pitching for a while. Since they won the World Series in 15. They didn't have much in the farm system, or at least nothing ready. They now have guys that are getting, I'm not going to say they're ready, but they're getting closer. And if you're a Royals fan, I think you've got to circle on the calendar. I don't think next year is the year. I think 2 years might be a little optimistic. I think 3 years from now, the Royals should be right there at the top challenging for the division title. Maybe 2 years. Next year, I think, is a little bit too optimistic. But I have to say, I am encouraged by some of the early returns by these young pitchers, but it is a different dynamic because it is a shortened season, so forth and so on. But in order for the Royals to take that next step, they need those pitchers to be good. But also, they need their young stars, or what they think are going to be stars, to perform. And one of those guys that is not doing that is Alberto Mondesi, who is 25. He is one of the most athletic or gifted players in the Royals organization, if not in baseball. You know, last year he had 20 doubles, 9 homers, and 10 triples and stole 43 bases and only played 102 games. But this year he's hitting 186. He had started every game of the season up till yesterday. He had been 8 for his last 68. No extra base hits, 24 strikeouts in those 68 at-bats. Matheny's kept Mondesi in the game primarily because of his elite defense, because give credit to Mondesi, he hadn't let his defense suffer. But you need to hit as a shortstop in this league. And Matheny says he's still my guy. On Monday night, Mondesi went 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts. So it is amazing. And I'm not going to get too concerned about Mondesi because it is a shortened season. You didn't have the normal get up prepared, ready to go for the year. But it is definitely a regression because he looked like he had really turned the corner last year. And you thought he was set to really take off and had figured things out. And instead, you know, offensively, he's just a complete mess at the plate. And it's frustrating to watch. And yesterday, I wouldn't say he was benched. He got a day off, and then we'll see if that helps him. You got to still keep putting him out there.
Oh, for sure. And
he is the future, I would hope. You can't get better than that. He won't be. But
no, yeah.
And the Royals don't have to, like, freak out. You know, if they're 22-14, he'd probably be on the bench more often, obviously.
For sure. If they're 22-14, he's probably hitting better, too.
Well, right.
You know, really, really think about everything that would be involved in being 22-14. Yeah. But yeah, if he was playing like he is right now and they're 22-14,
I'm saying, like, maybe he struggled the first week and they're like, wow, he was 0-20. Well, we're going to sit him. And this other guy comes in and does, you know, a decent job. And they're like, hey, we're winning. Why are we going to change it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is perplexing to see him struggle so badly at the plate. So if you're a Royals fan, you got to hope that he figures it out. And if it's not this year, don't freak out. Now, if he struggles again next year, then I'd freak out.
Back into a 162-game season, you have all the, hopefully, the right spring training and everything like that. Then if he's still struggling, that's when you, I don't know about this. Might be time for a change. But
yeah, he's only 25.
Too early right now to think about that.
No, way too early.
In a season like this.
Give up on the kid. NHL, the Royals, by the way, in action tonight against Indians 7:05. Jacob Junis on the hill for the boys in blue. The Islanders in hockey, they win last night, stay alive, 4-3. The Islanders lead that best of 7-3-2. The Canucks, they are able to stay alive as well. They beat the Golden Knights of Vegas 2-1. Vegas leads that series 3-2. Only one game on the docket tonight, 7 o'clock on NBC Sports Network because, you know, NHL's got a great TV package. Colorado Avs against the Dallas Stars. Stars lead 3-2. Go Avs. Go Avs for two more years and then release the Kraken. And then tomorrow...
They can do the same thing the Denver basketball team did to come back from 3-1 and win a series.
Sometimes that happens. Sometimes that, there's... What do you call that? Karma or... I don't say coincidence, but the stars align.
Yeah.
There's a certain energy. It could very well happen. That would be crazy. Hey, you just heard it. Dusty called it. The Avs are going to come back from 3-1, and they're going to win the series. Remember it, Dusty mentioned that.
I said they could do it.
Okay. You're not going to go on a limb and call it? It'd make you. I mean, you got nothing to lose. If you get it wrong, nobody's going to remember that.
Yeah, I don't think.
So you got to learn how this game is played, Dusty.
They've got some deeper issues, I think, than the Nuggets did. I think the Nuggets just played some bad basketball there for a little bit and didn't.
Really? How much hockey of this series have you watched?
No, I'm just from, actually, I know the girl that used to work down at KWCH. Uh-huh. I follow her still from, she's at Denver, Ariel Estudo, and I actually see her Twitter stuff. Uh-huh. But I would not know about Avalanche hockey if I wouldn't be following Ariel.
That's funny. So you're going off a fan's take on the
Avalanche. She worked at KWCH. She's in the media.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. So a fan or a media person.
Yeah.
You're going off.
But I mean, she's kind of
what she's saying about
updates on how they're doing.
Okay. So I she's still saying they're not.
Otherwise, I don't.
They have
see
issues. It's not a good matchup for them. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah. It's just from what
fine.
What
you're
I'm
not going to go there.
I'm not going to go. I'm not going to take that and go on a limb about a sport I don't know that very much about.
That's it. I'm calling my shot. Avs are coming back 3-1. They don't. Nobody's going to remember. Who cares? That's what you do with sports talk. You make these predictions, and then, you focus on a few you get right, especially the crazy ones, and forget the ones you get wrong. I've done that a few times.
Oh,
I remember the 3-1 prediction when the LeBron was behind. I remember that 3-1 prediction when LeBron and the Cavs were behind the Warriors, and I had people telling me I was nuts to say the Cavs weren't dead. And I said, don't make it game 7. LeBron and the Cavs are going to win. People told me I was nuts. And then all of a sudden, I didn't hear from them after that series. And I remember one time I picked the KUK State men's basketball game, the exact score correctly. I won't mention any of the other predictions that we may have had. I do believe there was some college football playoff game where I thought Wisconsin or somebody was going to give Alabama a game, and I think it ended up being 40-7 or something. So, yeah, we get a few wrong. That happens from time to time. But you're able to go out way out on that limb, and then you get one right. Those stand out, man. Those stand out.
Sure,
so I was giving you an opportunity to take it and run, but instead you handed it right to me.
I'm going to go and on so a now, limb in a sport I know about.
So now the Avs have a chance to make me look really, really good from something that I pickpocketed from Dusty.
Yeah.
Sweet, because Dusty didn't have the guts to say will. He just said could. That's the difference in what we just talked about. Now watch the Stars win 7-0 tonight and smoke the Avs. And tomorrow, nobody's going to remember what I said.
Yeah.
Shoot. People don't remember what I say at my house, so why are people going to remember what I say on the radio, per se? Actually, you know how it is. People remember when you mess up, that's for sure. Okay, just remember, what you learned today from the show is very important, and that is boneless chicken wings. It needs to be addressed.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.